Welcome to another episode of the Wheelchair Roundtable, where real people share real stories, and together we crush stigmas one episode at a time. We're coming to you straight from the Rio Grande Valley, the front line of the USA, where Texas meets Mexico, separated by the Rio Grande River. I'm your host, Rico ATP, and riding shotgun is Mr. Did I just say that? Roland Reyes. We're just two ATPs with a mic, a mission, and a whole lot of passion. This podcast is about real people, real stories, real power, spotlighting life after injury, adaptive technology, and the voices reshaping what it means to roll forward. Buckle up, because at this roundtable, we're not just talking, we're building a movement. How's it going, my friend Roland?
Going well. Busy day.
Yeah, how was your day today?
It was great. Got a lot done.
Yeah.
Had a little breakthrough with our system, working through it, figuring it out.
Yeah.
Having a good time.
Progress.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
Yep.
And your weekend?
It was smooth. I did some cooking, enjoyed that, had some family over, enjoyed that.
What'd you make?
Cajun food, I think it was.
Sam, call me.
Yeah, I will.
Well, get this. On Friday afternoon, I get a call. It's a Houston area code phone number, so I pick it up. And somebody's crying on the phone. Crying. Yeah, you got the wrong number. And it's my son in Houston. So he's crying. He tells me that he was just in an accident, that he rear-ended somebody. The lady was 8 months pregnant. She got sent to the hospital. He got picked up for reckless driving at high speeds. So he's telling me this. He's starting to mumble a little bit, but he cut his mouth while he was in the accident. Yeah. So I'm freaking out, dude. My heart's falling apart. He gives me a case number, gives me an attorney that he picked up. So I call the attorney, and the attorney picks up, and it's a $250,000 bond.
Right. Wow, dude.
Well,
I had no idea.
This attorney tells me that he can work out a deal for a $7,900 bond, cash. Flag number one, cash, right? So I said, so I'm freaking out. I was like, okay, well, let me see what I can do. And he goes, I'm going to call you back. You know, she can give me that money. So I, my daughter looks at his location, and it's the Houston Police Department. When I was talking to this attorney, when I asked him, I forgot to mention this, he said that he was in San Antonio. So by this time, my daughter's calling his girlfriend. He's not in jail.
It was a scam.
It was a scam.
Well, how did they get your son's voice?
I do not know.
AI,
bro. It was
I've heard of this. I've heard of this in Mexico, mostly, like kidnapping American citizens. Yeah, that's what, no, this exact scenario has played out a lot in Nuevo Laredo, and those areas. I've heard a lot of that, dude.
They had me. I was convinced. You know, he had to call me, and it had been a while since I talked to him.
Yeah.
So I got emotional, and dude, the rest of the day, I was a wreck.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was just so traumatizing.
Man, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, but at least I didn't send the money. Everything's fine, dude. Now I'm good.
How close were you to sending that
money? Not close, because I don't have it.
Son, is it really that uncomfortable?
I'd be like, son, you're spending a month in jail. We'll get that bond down. But yeah, so anybody listening to this, be careful. Wow. Be very careful. I don't know, back in the 80s, it was Nancy Reagan, the DARE program.
Yeah.
So one thing I do remember is they suggested the family had a family password. So I went old school and I told my kids, hey, this is the passwords. Anything goes down, I'm going to ask you for this, and then we know we're legit. So that was Friday. Yesterday, the Rio Grande Valley Vipers wheelchair basketball team took on the Corpus Christi Rims over in Edinburgh Parks and Rec.
How'd we do?
We did pretty good. Teams coming together. I mean, I'm so proud of those teams. It's just the way, you know, where they've started and where they're at today, and just see them compete and just seeing the families cheer them on. You know how long it's been since they've been cheered for? And how many times their family, how long it's been for their family to see them doing something awesome.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, bro. So,
Anthony there?
Yeah, Anthony's there.
He did well.
Yeah, I posted a video on social media and he's just there with his ponytail zipping through everything.
Nice.
But any feedback on episode one?
Just from my family members.
What they say?
Asking me to slow down and calm down
a
little bit, relax, smile, have a good time.
My dad said he would go with Cletus too.
Yeah, Cletus was my guy. We're onboarding right now, so we're waiting on Cletus.
Did he buy a toolbox?
We're going to gift him something, get him going.
Does he know left from right?
It doesn't matter at this point. But
all right. So if you just bear with me, I'm going to check something right here. We've been getting some pretty good. We have 38 downloads. All right. I apologize for my mumbling. So let me talk to you about where we're at. So as of today, we have 38 downloads. We're getting 42% off Spotify, 23% off Chrome, 15% off Safari, Amazon Music, Instagram, Listen Notes, Alexia, Edge, and Apple Podcasts. I know we have people listening in from McAllen, Texas, Edinburgh, Texas, San Antonio, Texas, Austin, Texas. Oslico, Texas, El Paso, Texas, Horn Lake, Cypress, Houston, Pflugerville, Round Rock, Sugarland, one person in Chicago, and somebody in Utah.
Utah.
Yeah, man. I think we're doing something, right?
We are on our way.
All right. Well, let's get to today's episode. This is what the podcast is all about, bringing on some people to share their experience, strength, and hope with each other so we can hear some amazing stories. So today at the roundtable, we're joined by someone whose story is powerful as it is personal. He is living with a C5, C6, incomplete spinal cord injury, a life-changing moment that redefined his path but never dimmed his spirits. He is here to share what rehab really looks like, the highs, the lows, and everything in between. Danny's rolling forward, and he's bringing us with him for the ride.
Now, before we dive into Danny's story, let's break down what a C5, C6, incomplete spinal cord injury actually means. So C5 and C6 refer to the lower part of the neck. Those are the fifth and sixth vertebrae in the cervical spine. An injury at that level, it can affect his arms, shoulder, and hand movements, depending on how deep or complete the damage is. Now, Danny's injury is what we call incomplete, which means the spinal cord wasn't fully severed. Some signals from the brain still get through. That's big. It means that there's still potential for movement, feeling, and recovery. He's certainly going to change during the process, especially with rehab therapy and adaptive technology. Most folks with a C5, C6 injury might have shoulder control, elbow movement, and maybe even some wrist or grip function, especially with something called a tenodesis.
Yeah.
Grip,
tenodesis.
Where the wrist movement helps the hand grasp. Every case is different, but one thing's for sure, the road forward takes strength, grit, and support. And my friend Danny brings all three to the table today. How's it going, Danny?
It's going good, guys. Good to be here.
Good to have you on, man.
Yeah.
So Dan, we're going to have a conversation with you, and I commend you for doing this and being honest and just letting us know what it's really like living with a spinal cord injury. So we've got some questions we're going to go through, and something you're not comfortable answering, just let us know, right?
Okay.
So, man, tell us, introduce yourself, Mr. Daniel.
So, Daniel Flores from Edinburgh, Texas. I got injured in July 21st of 2007. And like the guys mentioned, I'm a C5, C6 incomplete. So, yeah, it just happened during a flag football tournament, and I broke my neck. And immediately, you know, it was just a life changer. And it's been a ride ever since.
Well, Danny, prior to get your injury, describe yourself. What were you like before the injury? What kind of guy were you? And what was life before and Danny got injured?
So I was 27 when I got hurt. I was very active. I was always at these flag football tournaments or softball tournaments. I was at school at the time. I was working on my pre-med degree, getting ready to go to chiropractic school. But yeah, aside from that, just, you know, active, going to school, getting ready to move to the new school that I wanted to in Dallas. You know, I was a couple of months away from that, about a semester away before that happened. I would have been there. And yeah, just your typical 20 something year old, just up to no good sometimes, but having fun.
Yeah.
And just kind of at that point, just starting to figure out what it is that I wanted to do.
Yeah. Danny, can you take us back to the day of your injury? Walk us and the listeners through the day you were injured.
Oh, funny story. The last picture that you see of me standing is me and the flag football team at the airport here in McAllen, Texas. And it's a group picture of us taking a shot. And the reason that is because the plane was delayed. So we were getting ready to head to Houston. And then from Houston, we're going to go to Denver. Because of that delay, we ended up having to stay in Houston because it was so late at that point. And we had to wake up really early that I think it was a Saturday morning in Houston to be the first flight out to Denver. So we were already late getting to the tournament. We get there, I'm freaking out because the mountains are there and I've never seen mountains that big. So we just, you know, everybody just drops their stuff off and gets change on the way over there. And we get to the game and we get a couple plays in and we're surprised because that team scored really fast, where usually it's us that scores pretty fast. And then we, you know, a couple more plays in and I'm on defense and they threw the ball to the guy I was defending and we both went up for the ball, bobbled it. We're both kind of looking up, bobbling the ball. My feet kind of slid under me. So I landed on my seat, but because we were running so fast, I slid a couple yards and the guy that was behind me, he was bobbling the ball looking up. And at some point, he just trips over me, but his thigh hits the back of my head and he falls over me. So my head goes down to my chest area while I'm in the sitting position. And then I just kind of flop back and I try to get up just like any other play. And about halfway up, my body just goes limp. And immediately I knew something was wrong. I could feel a buzz through my body. It's the only way I could explain it. It was just kind of numb. Before. And I the only other thing that I felt was a heavy weight on my chest, like somebody was standing on it, and a really sharp pain coming from my C5, C6 neck area. So that's what was going on.
And you had mentioned to me before that you were pretty aware of what had just occurred. Like there was no question in your mind what had just happened to you.
Yeah, I knew immediately that I had broken my neck, and I knew what that meant, right? I was pre-med, so I knew the repercussions of having a broken neck, right? And so I knew more than likely that that's what it was. I mean, of course, I was holding out. Maybe it's something else. Maybe, you know, it's just a stinger or something. But it was that pressure on my chest and that sharp stabbing pain in my neck that I really was telling me it was worse than you know. What I was hoping it wasn't, but it was. So I was very aware of what was going on.
So Danny, as you're there laying on the football field, what's going through your mind in those first moments? I mean, were you, like you mentioned, you were aware how serious the injury was, but physically, the best way you can describe is you started feeling that tingling. So when all this is going on, it's hitting you, what's going through your mind?
I'm just thinking, one, right, I just need to be calm, right? Nothing good can happen from me freaking out. So I was just thinking, be calm, have somebody, because I, you know, like I said, as time went on, right, those 10-15 minutes, it just, you know, you start thinking about it a little bit more. Okay, you know what, I can't move anything, there's nothing moving, I'm trying everything and nothing. Somebody call my parents, tell them, hey, I'm going to the hospital, because I could hear everybody getting the hospital there. My boss, who I was playing with, he was a chiropractor, and I was telling him what I was feeling at that point and telling him what was going on, what I felt, what I didn't feel. He was squeezing my foot and asking me if I could feel that. Like, you know, I was saying, no, I can't. So my main concern was just calm, have somebody call my parents, tell them I'm going to the hospital, and just concentrate on breathing, right? Because that was the one thing that was more worrisome than anything. It's just, like I said, it felt like somebody was standing on my chest.
How labored was your breathing?
I had to really think about it, just take my deep breaths. I don't know if you've ever had somebody just kind of on you. Like when I was younger and we used to wrestle and, you know, somebody was on you. You could feel that it was just, you had to like really push to breathe. That's what it felt like. It wasn't like I was gasping, but it felt like I had to really put some effort into it. Like I wasn't gasping for it, but I had to put some effort into it.
Yeah. No, I know exactly what you're feeling there. It's really scary. It's a scary feeling.
So Danny, so you're there. How long before the ambulance gets there?
I'd say about 15 minutes, maybe, from what I remember. I may be wrong, but I guess in the rush and everybody kind of freaking out around me, I was, it seemed faster, but yeah, in my mind, it was about 10 to 15 minutes.
So you're in the back of the ambulance. You're going to the hospital. What at that point is it? More real for you, or what's going on?
Again, I could hear my boss in the front seat talking to my parents on the way to the hospital, just letting them know what's going on. I mean, he didn't know anything for sure, right? He's just telling them we're headed to the hospital. Couldn't really say much after that because he's just, you know, he's not sure what's going on with me. In the back with the paramedic, I'm just, just laying there. He's asking me some questions, and I'm, you know, just telling them what I'm feeling more than anything. If I'm in pain or anything like that, they've got a brace on my neck. I can't really move at all. I'm tied down. And I'm just kind of prepping myself. Okay, I'm going to an emergency room, which I've been in an emergency room before. Not for me, but I just, you know, I've been in there. I had been in there before, so I kind of knew what to expect, what's going to happen around me, right? And so it was, wasn't freaking out really. I was just, you know, I was calm-ish because once I got there, the doctors and stuff were asking me a bunch of questions. And I was, like I said, I was very aware of what was going on around me. So I could answer questions. And I figured right now at that point, just concentrate on what they're asking me because that's the best help that I can give them. And so that's really what I was worried about. So I guess, you know, I wasn't worried too much about anything else, just giving them as much information as I could so they can better do their job, I guess.
So now you're in the hospital, now you're in the ER. What happens next?
They begin by putting a halo on my head, which hurts because I can feel the kind of those little screws that they used pressing up against your skull, right? And then once he's got them in there, he starts to kind of pull on my head a little bit to create some traction. And that was very uncomfortable because I could feel the little bit of crunching in my neck of it. That was odd to hear, like some bones inside your head. That's what it felt like. Like the sound felt like there was some crunching in my head, which is weird. But it was my neck when he was pulling on it, trying to create some space, I guess. And then it got real uncomfortable because then they're saying they're going to have to put me under to fuse. I can hear them kind of saying, we have to fuse his neck or something. It gets kind of blurry there because they started to try to put something in my nose to breathe, but I wasn't having any of that. And shortly thereafter, I went under. And I guess that's when they performed the fusion through the front part. Right next to my throat, there's a scar on the left side where they fused my neck through the front part.
So you wake up from the procedure, you're in the hospital bed. What's going on?
That day or two are really blurry. I think I remember my one or two of my teammates in there with my boss there. It's really blurry. I was on a lot of meds and I've never done well with like pain medicine ever. Not good with them. Those 2 days I think were a blur. So that first day, again, I remember talking barely to my boss and the two teammates that were there after I got out of surgery, but it wasn't until my parents got there, which was the day after, right, that they showed up. And I vividly remember them getting there. That was a bit emotional because I could see the worry in their eyes and, you know, just trying to stay strong so they don't freak out, right? Even though they were freaking out. But it was just, yeah, that first two or three days, because I did have another surgery a couple days after. So that was on a Saturday when I got hurt. I think that Tuesday or that Wednesday, I had the second surgery where they fused it from the backside. So yeah, those couple of days were just a blur because of all the medicine I was on.
Did you have any movement anywhere at that point?
So the only thing I could do was my biceps were okay. I could curl my arm up and do sort of a shrug. I could shrug my shoulders and really just bring my arm up really. But if I had anything, like if it was too heavy, I wouldn't be able to lift it. But everything. And at that point I had no sensation, right? So from my chest down and even my arms, like from, I would say from elbow down, maybe I had no sensation. So even though I could get my arm up, I didn't feel it. But yeah, that first 2 weeks, I didn't have any sensation.
And after that, how long did it take before you got over to Craig Hospital?
So I was in ICU for 2 weeks and then I moved up to the rehab center there at Denver Health for 4 weeks. Cause it was, let me see, I got hurt July 21st. And I didn't get to Craig until the end of August. So I was at the hospital for about 6 weeks before I finally got to Craig.
What type of hospital was that, the first one?
Denver Health it's a trauma one hospital. And they, you know, the therapists there were awesome. The occupational and physical therapists there that I had kind of put me to work pretty quickly. After about 3 weeks, that's when I kind of started to kind of move me around and, you know, little things that I could try to do, and they were pushing me to do those things.
So tell us, man, what's Craig like?
Craig is...
Heard some good things about that place.
Craig's amazing, right? Without Craig, I'm not here. It's just, I was there for 3 months. So one thing you do at Craig is they've got two wings. When you first get there, you're in the wing where you're kind of sharing a room with another patient. And it's funny because you have conversations with that person, but you rarely ever see them because you're both kind of in bed the entire time. So at night, you're just kind of talking to each other and just bullshitting about whatever we're going through at that moment, asking each other how we got hurt. And then at some point, after a couple of weeks, you go to the other wing where you finally have your own room. It's almost like a little small apartment, which is great. But yeah, you get there, you immediately get given a team of people, your main doctor, your main nurse, your main PA, your main CNAs. You get two or three different CNAs. You get a social worker, you get a psychiatrist, I can't remember, that you talk to. And then, you know, you get introduced to the gym area, to the different floors that they have there, because I think we're in the third floor. All the third floor is spinal cord injuries, at least at that time was spinal cord injuries, and the second floor was brain injuries. So everyone there is in wheelchairs, right? So
you mentioned a previous conversation you had with me that some of your nights there at Craig were the worst times you had during your stay.
actually, the worst nights were the nights were at the first hospital where I had
first hospital. Okay.
Yeah. I was, oh God, those were the worst. It was because the first 2 weeks, again, they were a blur and my parents could stay in the room with me at night. I also have a friend of mine. She stayed there with me a whole week, which is amazing. So I had somebody there with me. But once I moved upstairs to the hospital, I didn't have a roommate and they wouldn't allow your parents to stay there. So those were the rough nights, especially the first. I would say the third and fourth week, third, fourth, maybe fifth week after injury were really rough. Because you're alone, you get in your own head, you get those nasty thoughts about, oh, just take me away. I'm done with this. I can't do anything. You start feeling sorry for yourself. It's just like, that's it. Just why am I here? Right. So yeah, you can get in your head and it's not a good place to be. So yeah, those were the rough nights. I'd say the third, fourth week.
Yeah. What was the hardest thing for you to accept in those early months before you left Craig?
Before I left the hospital or Craig?
Before you left Craig, like at the end of your, when you came back to Texas, what was up until that point, what was some of the hardest things you had to deal with or accept about your injury?
It was, you know what, surprisingly enough, it was the little things. Being able to write or play my guitar or... You know, before that, I was a magician. I used to love doing magic as just a little hobby, right? It was little things, surprisingly, that were the toughest for me to just, you know, get over the fact that I wouldn't be able to do those things ever again. It's always been the little things that really, and those are the things that still frustrate me to this day sometimes. It's those little things, right? A lot of people ask, man, what would you do to walk again? It's like, dude, you know, I would rather have the use of my arms and hands back, right? My hands. If I can get my hands back,
right,
I would be fine.
It'd be huge. It'd
be a whole different ballgame for me. So I think initially those were the things, and a little bit today, right? But it's those little things that I wasn't going to be able to do that really kind of, you know, it's like, oh God. Because when I was at the hospital, you didn't have time to think of that, right? You're at the hospital, you had a schedule at Craig. You would, on Monday morning, you'd see your schedule for the entire week. And these are the things we're going to do, right? You were busy from 9 in the morning till about 2 or 3 in the afternoon. You had something to do every day. And I think, one, yes, they're trying to teach you as much as possible and get you ready for home life. But I think also to keep you from getting in your own head, right? You're doing something, you're kind of distracted and, you know, that's what was going on. But I would say the little things. It's always been the little things that to this day still frustrate me.
Understood. Danny, so when I worked for Invacare as one of the reps, Craig Hospital was one of the targets. It was right up there next to Tier. So I've heard a lot of great things about this hospital. So Danny, Tell me how the therapy team works there.
Okay, so as part of your team, you're going to get an occupational therapist and also a physical therapist. Dono is my, I still remember them to this day. Well, I even remember the PT and the OT from the hospital, but at Craig, it was Donna and Miss Soto. And Miss Soto was my PT and Miss Mary Soto was her name. She was a beast. She would push. She pushed. She was no joke. Tough, but fair. And she would not let me feel sorry for myself.
Made you work.
Yeah, it was the war room. They called it the war room where we worked out. She saw what I was really good at, right? Because when I got to Craig, my arm strength, now I could move my arms a bit, but getting my arms above shoulder length, like shoulder height, was an issue for me. So that was the first thing she had me start to working on, right? So first thing was getting me on the machine that was kind of like an anti-gravity machine that they tie my arms up to it. And I would do certain movements and I would get above my head and do certain things. And then she would have me do so many assisted pull-ups where I'd be laying down, turning over on the mat, transferring all the time, right? Those were the first couple of weeks there. It was just putting in that work, right? And the scariest thing was, of course, getting put in a stander. I hadn't stood, like I had at the previous hospital, I had only been able to get up to 45 degrees at an angle to stand, right? But this was they were going to use an actual stander here. And I remember right before I got up to stand for the first time since my accident, there was a person in front of me on that same stander and she passed out. And I'm thinking, you're going to put me on that, right? And freaking out, right? But I did it. I got up there and about 15 seconds in, I was like, guys, I can't hear anything anymore. And they were like, okay, that's your blood pressure. So they let me back down. So my first time standing was only 15 seconds. But yeah, it was tough like that. And then my OT, all right, here are some checkers or Connect Four. You can't move your fingers, so how are you going to pick it up? What are you going to do? How are you going to figure it out, right? And it's head games, right?
Amazing.
You're in a constant battle with yourself, right? Because you can't do basic stuff. there's this pencil there on the table. Pick it up. Now write something. Well, how do you expect it? Well, let's figure it out together, right? And yes, they're going to kind of push you and say, suggest certain things, but it's a constant battle with yourself over the simplest things that mostly I had never thought of before, right? We don't really think about picking that little object up, right? And figuring those things out to where, okay, you know what? You could do this, right? Little victories. It's all about little victories at that point. What can you do today, right? Because at least for me, the thing that helped is just trying those little victories instead of pushing for too big of a thing that you're probably just going to fail at, right? And that's going to frustrate you even more. And I saw it a lot, right? Like I would see other patients there just get frustrated like over little things, right? Especially guys or girls that could use their hands. And I'm like, dude, like you're over there getting angry, but there's a person next to you with a breathing tube that wishes they could just use their hands right now. So keeping that in mind and saying, okay, you know what? It could be worse and let's focus on these little things. And if I can't do it today, we'll do it tomorrow, right? And that's where you kind of have to be. Yes, you're going to have your bad days. And I had a lot of bad days where I just did not want to do anything. But, you know, my parents were there. Hey, you know what? Let's not feel sorry for yourself. Let's go and do this thing, right? And, you know, they were really good. All the therapists and all the, you know, physical, occupational therapists, everyone knew everyone, even though you weren't their patient. Everyone knew everyone. And it was such a tight group that, you know, it was always a positive. Let's just push forward, baby steps. And that's what it was. And that's how I got through it.
Some of the challenges that you initially faced that first year post-injury that got better over the years. I know it's been 18 years. Uh-huh. Is there anything you can think of that got better? And on the opposite side of that coin, are there things that you still struggle with today that you struggled with initially?
So I think the things I've got better are the things that I focused on, right? Because I think one of the things that was taught to me there at Craig was, what are you going to spend your energy on? Because it's a long day, right? Your arms are your shoulders, right? What is it that you're going to focus on and spend your energy on working through and figuring out? And what are the things that you're not, right? And that's a big thing. Do I want to focus on getting strong enough so I can do transfers into a vehicle by myself or whatever it may be, right? Or do I want to focus on writing? Or do I want to focus on eating some spaghetti without needing a strap all over my hand or somebody to help me, right? Because I needed help. Initially, when I got home, I was being fed like a kid, right? I couldn't figure out the damn fork thing. I kept stabbing myself. So once I figured out, okay, well, what's my goal, right? I want to go back to school and I want to work. So, okay, let's use my energy for, you know, you can't write. So let's practice. I figured that out, right? I can write all day now. What else do I need to learn how to do? Let's practice opening and closing doors because I know that if I'm working, I'm going to have to do that. Not every place is handicap accessible. So how am I going to figure that out, right? So I can do those things now. You know, one of the things they used to do to us is just drop stuff next to the wheelchair on the floor and figure out to pick those things up. I still can't pick up coins, but I can pick up a bunch of other stuff pretty easily now. Like you said earlier, Tinodesis. It's a huge help for me. I use it for things. If anybody knows what Tinodesis is, if you just
tell us about that.
Yes, please.
If you just relax your wrist, right? Put your wrist down, put your elbow on the table and then your wrist goes forward, just relaxed, right? Mm-hmm. You notice how your index finger and your thumb are separate, right? But if you flex, if you bring your wrist back, notice how your thumb and your index finger come together. Does that make sense?
Yeah, a little bit.
That is Tinodesis. Right, okay. So it's using that to get to things and then flexing my wrist back and hoping that my thumb and my index finger get close enough together so where it can grip it enough for me to grab it, right? That's Tinodesis. And it's going to be different for everyone. It's better on my left hand than it is on my right hand because my left fingers are a little tighter for whatever reason. So I can do it there better. Initially, I used to have to use all sorts of little gloves and contraptions. Now I really don't put anything on my hands. Now, ask me if I can transfer, right? I didn't put a lot of effort into transferring. I can do it. I've seen guys, oh my God, I'm amazed by some guys that I've seen transfer into their vehicles. Like
me too.
But you can tell they worked on it, right? Look at their elbows next time. You'll see all those calluses that they get from just transferring in and out and putting their wheelchair into the vehicle like that. I there's a champions. Bunch of reasons I didn't work on that, because one, it's hot here in South Texas. I will say the biggest problem for me is the lack of temperature regulation. That is my Achilles heel. I cannot regulate my temperature. A lot of people need to know that when you get hurt, especially for a higher up like me, C4, C5, C6, is that you lose the control to be able to sweat when you get hot or warm your body up when you get cold. And that restricts me from being able to do a lot of outdoor activities that I used to love. Well, how do you combat that, right? Because now I'm a lizard, right? If it gets cold, I go to the sun. If it gets hot, I go inside. I'm like a lizard. That's what I tell my students. So a lot of what I do is now I have to start thinking about like the weather. Is it going to be cold outside, hot outside? That's going to kind of push the things I do for that day. So back to transferring, right? Like I'm not going to spend too much time transferring. I have help here that I pay for. I have somebody help me get in and out of bed, and my parents help me as well. And I have a vehicle that I can get in and out of by myself with a ramp on the van, or my truck has this really cool lift that goes and lifts me into the truck. And that's how I do it. Because
It sounds like you prioritized what you were going to be good at. Yeah.
And you have to, I think. Yeah. Because if you have too much on your plate, right? If you're trying to figure everything out, trying to conquer everything, it's tougher, I think. I think, like I said, that something that was instilled in me at Craig is prioritize and focus on the things that you want to get good at. And then the other things, once you get good at those, you can start working on those other things, right? Have a goal, right? And those are my goals. And now I can do them. I can run circles around people at work, right? I'm just in and out.
Danny, talk about your wheelchair. So when the ATPs went into clinic, how did they do the wheelchair clinic there at Craig?
Okay, so at Craig, they work with your PT and OT and the doctor, of course. And they meet, there was a gentleman there. He had his office right there next to the war room. He had all the equipment there. And before you leave, right, about a month before you leave, they start talking to you about what kind of wheelchair you're going to need. I initially started with a power chair while I was at Craig. And then after the first month, they kind of took that away and I got into a lightweight manual wheelchair that they had there, which was pretty good. It was, and they saw how well, because I think I tried like two or three different manual wheelchairs that they had there. And they saw what I worked better with and what kind of cushions I would need and backs and stuff like that. And so come time of the assessment for my new chair, they've made all their notes. They've seen what worked, what didn't work. And they work with a gentleman there to get me the right equipment. And that's what we did.
Nice.
Did you use vertical projections, or how did you grip your hand rims to push the chair?
Okay. So I always, in order to push my wheelchair, you mean?
Yes.
I've always needed the rubber hand rim.
Right.
And I've always had to use, or I had to, I don't, not anymore, but I had to use a push glove that had some Dysom on it. So it,
yes.
That and the rubber was always enough. And that's how I started. And that's how I got around my first 8 years or so. As time went by, I became more of a tire pusher. So My palms would be on the actual tire itself. And I had some gnarly calluses on my palm.
Bet you did.
But as you know, by the second wheelchair, that's what I was doing. And then now, you know, by last year, I was like, okay, you know what? I need to start thinking about saving my shoulders, right? I've done 17 years of pushing myself everywhere. I would use when I say sparingly, I mean like rarely use my power chair that I came down with.
Right.
And because I've always wanted to try to stay as active as possible, right? By myself. So, but time comes where you're like, okay, you know what? I need to start taking care of it. My shoulders are achy. I'm getting older. And so last year I got a chair that has some power assist on it.
Get some twions. How are those twions working for you?
Amazing. I don't have to put enough effort. It still makes me feel like I'm putting, you know, I'm still moving myself, but without as much effort. I don't
game
have
changer.
It. Yeah, game changer.
Love it.
I don't know. I should have done it earlier, but game changer, big time. And if you can get them, especially if you're really, you know, I've got upper body weakness, but you don't want to be in a power chair, because power chairs are a bit bigger and clunky, right? If you want to stay in a chair and get around by pushing yourself, but you don't have to push as hard. Yeah, any power assist that you can get is so helpful.
What are the percentages you use power versus pushing a manual wheelchair?
On this bad boy?
Yeah.
I have it on the low setting.
No. So, I mean, how often do you use power versus manual? Look, 50%.
I have it on all day. I don't. Because if I turn it off, it's really hard to push.
Oh yeah,
it's hard to push. I couldn't. I mean, I can do a short distance here in the room if I don't want to have them on. But and The cool thing is, if I just want some regular wheels on it, I've got the regular wheels. I can just pop these off and put those on, and then it would be like a normal chair. But I keep these on all day because the charge is great on them. I've had it over a year now, and you know, I'm not trying to tire myself out. So if it's there and it's working for me, I'm just going to leave them on all day. But like I said, I have it on the lowest setting, so I'm not flying. Like at work, I put it in my classroom. I'll have it at the low setting as well. But if I'm in an open area, I can pump it up a notch.
Can you tell us a little bit about what you do for a living, Danny?
Well, before we get to that, Danny, let me ask you this. So we're going to wrap up everything at Craig Hospital. So let's fast forward when you get home. Like Roland was saying, you were mentioning earlier about learning certain things because like you want to go back to work. What was Danny's plan, man? How did you get to where you're at today?
So plan was get stronger. That was the first thing. Work on getting stronger, right? I ended up going to about five months after I got home, I went to a place called Project Walk in California, which is I don't think they're around anymore, but it was a way which they kind of made you work out, but not your typical physical therapy kind of stuff. They take the chair away from you and all the work that you're doing is away from the wheelchair. And so I took what I got from them for being there a little over a week. They give you a plan and I brought that home and I got whatever equipment I could afford to be able to do it. And that was my plan, right? Get strong. Because goal number one was finish school. I needed maybe another 2 to 3 semesters of school left. Normally, it ended up taking me a little bit longer because I needed to figure out, like at that point, I still didn't know how to like do my own notes and figure out how to learn again. Like normally, you go to school, you write things down, you say things, you do all these things, and you've got your own notes, but I didn't have that. So figuring that out, right? That was goal number one. And goal number two, again, was to start working, right? So all of my efforts and everything going on from when I got back from Craig, that first couple of months was getting me back to school, right? And I did. So I got hurt in July of 2007. In August of 2008, I was strong enough to go back to school. That was always fun because we didn't have a handicap vehicle. So we had my mom's little Jeep Liberty and they would transfer me in and out every day, right? And I finally did that, decided I wanted to be a teacher, worked on my teacher certificate while saying, you know what, I think I can go further. I know it's going to do me better. So I went for my master's in biology. After getting my bachelor's in biology and chemistry, I went for my master's in biology. Yeah. And now I'm a professor, and that all helped me get to this point where I can teach.
Hell yeah.
I teach at the high school.
Amazing story, Danny.
Yep. Yeah. And yeah, that's where I'm at now.
Danny, you mentioned about driving. So how do you drive?
So driving was fun. Learning to drive all over again. I don't know the name of the company that came down from Houston. There was a gentleman that came down. He was here all week and I had to put in, I think, 33 hours of drive time before I can go take my driving test. Initially, we had to figure out what I was good at, not good at, how strong I was, how old was it. And it was a little bit higher tech back in the day when I first started. I got a van initially and I still have basically the same setup. I've got a tri-pin on the steering wheel with a little counterbalance to make it easier. And then I don't know what it's called, but it's a little joystick to give it gas or put the brake. And that's how I get around. It's pretty simple, I think. I've seen some really high-tech ones. I think the cooler thing about my truck is the way I get in and out because the two doors come out and then there's like a platform that drops.
What kind of lift is it?
I don't know who made it. The company's not around anymore, so that's why I have to be careful. But it's basically the two doors on the driver's side go straight out about 3 feet, and then there's a platform that drops to the street level. And then I just back up into it and it lifts me up, and then I get scooted in all the way and I'm good to go.
Now,
so I drive out of my.
So if I'm not mistaken, you got some assistance, right? Getting that modification done to your vehicle.
Yes, I got assistance for the van initially through Department of Assistive and Rehab Services.
DARS.
They helped me get the modification for the van. I just had to pay for the van itself. And once that happened, they had to make sure that everything was up to the way what they were paying for, right? So they had a representative go over there, check the van, watch me get in and out of the van because they need to make sure I can get in and out by myself. That's what we're paying for, or they were paying for. And once that was done, it was golden. Now, eventually I switched from the van to the truck because in the van I had to transfer. There's that transfer again, right? I had to transfer from my chair into the seat. And again, I could do it, but it was just, I wasn't very good at it. And it took me a bit, right? So once I found out, hey, there's these trucks that they do where you can drive out of your chair. I was like, that would make life so much easier for me. And so I traded in the van and I got the truck.
Nice. So Danny, when you're going to school to study, what are the challenges that you faced? Because I know the university is such a big campus and you didn't have power assist at the time, right?
No, it was just my regular wheelchair. So, it, you know, the problems there, the getting in and out of the buildings there at campus was okay because there they have automatic doors everywhere. So those, not a problem. I was able to get in out. My main problem was if I'm in class, how am I going to get notes? And so all universities have a department of like disability services where if you have every college is going to have one of these. For those people that listening that want to go to college, they are going to have this department. They have to, it's law. And they, with some sort of note or whatever they need from the doctor saying he's, you know, he or she has this disability and what is it that person needs, right? So that was those are my heroes, right? So I get there, I tell them exactly what I have and they figure out, okay, these are machines that we have or does any of this equipment that we have, will it be able to help you? And I check it out. Do you need somebody to write for you? Yes. Would you like us to go to your classroom to take the notes? Or what I ended up doing is they said, unless you can find somebody in your classroom, we'll give you some carbon paper, tell them to keep the regular thing, and whoever that person is, have them come in to talk to us because they were getting like a really good hookup with, you know, they give prizes to them. But the main thing is they would give them like letters of recommendation for helping out a person with a disability. And I still am friends with those people that helped me out today to help me get those notes initially. Because again, initially I wasn't very good at writing and they did my notes. And that was the biggest thing is how am I going to get these things, right? Going through papers and stuff, I kind of did that at home and I would fumble and drop things all the time. But that was just something that I had to figure out, but it wasn't so much the size of the campus, right? Getting around, you know, I was strong enough to get around. It was the classroom stuff that I was more worried about.
Tell us a day in the life of Danny from waking to going to sleep, typical during a work week.
Work week?
Yeah. And also like your bowel and bladder management during the day and just take us through some of that and for our audience and for us.
So I have a lady that comes and helps me that I pay. She comes in the mornings, helps me get out of bed. She helps me bathe. I have a bowel program that we do once in the morning and that's it. And it's just suppository, digital stimulation. And that's all I need, right? I just need to go once a day and that's it. And I've learned that at Craig, right? That's one thing that, again, if you are a freshly injured person is get a schedule. I can't say that enough, right? Get a schedule. Are you going to do, if you have to have a bowel program, figure out when that's going to be, right? Your body will get used to it, right? I'm at the point where I go in the morning, I'm in the shower real quick. Suppository works really fast. And by the time I get out of the shower, I just get rolled into the position where I'm going to go to the restroom. And then any digital stimulation to get anything out and get cleaned up and I'm good to go. No need for diapers or anything like that, right? I've just got my boxers and my pants and I'm good to go. For my bladder, I have what they call a suprapubic catheter. So about 2 inches below your belly button, there's a catheter that goes right straight into my bladder. And then it's just a tube that goes along if I'm wearing pants, it goes along the side of my pants and the bag ends on like the right side of my calf. And if I've got shorts, it's just on the right leg, the right side or left side of my thigh. And it's just a little bag. And overnight we switch that out for a night bag, which can hold a lot more. And yeah, and that's how we have it hooked up every day. So that's the bladder bowel program, right? Once I'm done in the morning, she helps me get changed and then I drive off to work. Whatever lesson plans I can do here at home, since it's easier for me at home to get anything ready, I can do it here. And then I'll go off to work. And on an average day, a longer day would be about 16 hours for me from the time I wake up until the time I'm in bed. I wake up around 6:30. Well, maybe about 14 hours. Yeah. And then during the school year, I'll be in bed by about 8:30.
Okay. It's a pretty good step we're getting from you, Danny.
There was something else I had to say, right? Or did I answer all that question?
No, we just want to know what a day like from Dan.
Yeah.
For the morning, where you go to the day. Now, I know you had mentioned previously, how can you share with the audience how you have educated your students on wheelchair management?
So one thing that I always do, we start school in a couple of weeks. So the first week of school is, listen, guys, I'm going to need your help. You're going to need my help for the lessons, and I'm going to need your help physically, right? This is me. This is my wheelchair. This is how it works. If this and this happens, here's what you need to do. And we have a day, a little half of the class period to show them, you know, what happens if I fall. I've never fallen at work. At least I've fallen. Only time I've ever fallen is here at home. But what are you going to do if I fall, right? And I'll show them how to do it, right? If I need to go down some stairs, we don't have very many stairs yet, but if we do, how are we going to do that, right? What's the plan of action? So I teach them those things. Kind of mentioned to them that it's never happened to me, but like autonomic dysreflexia. What does that look like, right? If I start to, you know, get some of those symptoms, what do they need to do, right? God willing, that never happens, and I don't think I'll ever get to that point, but just in case, right? What are some things to look for? Don't freak out if I start choking, right? Because I can't clear my throat anymore, and I swallow wrong sometimes, and it looks like I'm choking, and they're going to freak out. It's like, guys, it's just I can't clear my throat out regularly. I might look like I'm choking, but I'm okay, right? So try to get them as ease as much as possible, because I know that a lot of these kids, they have parents or aunts and uncles or grandparents that are in wheelchairs, and they see them, and maybe some of them know how to push them around the wheelchair or whatnot, but I want to try to show them a little bit more, right? And if I have an extra chair, I'll put them in a chair so they can get the idea of what it is to kind of like figure things out and how to open the door, right? Those little things. So it's very important for me to show them that, because they're going to need it at some point, right? I don't know what the percentage is of people ending up in wheelchairs at some point in their life, but they're going to need to know those things.
True. Danny, so here's the question that I think our listeners have in their top two or top three. Talk to us about dating.
Dating?
Yes, sir.
Dating is, good Lord. Anybody out there, give me a holler. I haven't dated in a long time. Only because, of course, yes, I'm busy, and being a teacher, I don't have time. But again, there's always the side of me, which I saw a movie recently. What did they say? Something about, and this plays heavy in my mind, that person, right? Because I'm at a point where dating's tough. I'm 45, right? I want to try. If I can try to start a family, great, right? But people my age, they've had their kids, or they don't want kids, and so it's tricky, right? And finding the time to find somebody that's has the same plan as I do is tough. But whoever that person is, in the back of my mind, I'm always thinking that person, if it works out, I'm gonna need that person more than they're gonna need me. Physically. And it weighs heavy on my mind, because I'm thinking, I don't want to put them through that, right? They're going to be a caregiver essentially. And so then I shy away from it, right? It's like, God, like, does somebody want to be with me? Because it's going to be tough, right? As we get older, I know it's going to get tougher. And that weighs heavy on my mind. And that's one of the reasons that I kind of like, do I want to do that, or, right? And it's a stupid thing. It is. And most people would say, just get over it, and you know, that person will find you, right? Whatever. So when I get to the point where it's like, oh, I really like this person, mind games, right? And it's stupid mind games. And I think that's the biggest reason I've been single for so long. Yes, have I gone out on a date or two since I got hurt? Yes. But I always kind of get in my own head, and it's like, okay, we're just friends. And I don't know. It's just one of those things that I kind of get past that little invisible wall that I think I put up myself, and don't let people get too close, I guess. That's, you know, so dating, I want to try that. You know, we talked about focusing or prioritizing. I think this year, I really want to give it a go. Like, just put myself out there and say, okay, you know what? I'm ready. And if there's a person out there, then great, right?
She's out there. We got your back.
It's a weird conversation to have, right? But, you know.
We knew it would be.
It's tough. I was single when I got hurt. I know a lot of people that got hurt when they're married and they're still together and great. And how do you all do it? Like, I don't, it's just, it's been something that I've kind of stayed away from for so long that I don't know what to do. Like, it's one of those things, I'm new at it. So it's a different world out there too.
We appreciate you being so candid about it, for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But yeah, something I want to try this year for sure.
All right, Danny, I'm going to ask you one more question, right? So what would you say to someone newly injured and feeling hopeless right now? If the world could understand one thing about people with a spinal cord injury, what should it be?
It's tough, but it gets better. It gets better. It might not feel like it, but it will. You just have to tell yourself, this is going to suck. It's going to suck. I've met people, it's going to suck. It's going to. It sucks. It's going to suck. And you're going to have shit days, but it'll get better. You just got to maintain. Quick story. It'll take a minute. And
absolutely. It's something that take your time.
it's something that I've always kept with me. When I first got back, I was here for about a year, and I hadn't been in a convenience store in a year. And I was like, let me get down. And I'm getting to the door, and this gentleman opens the door, and he says two words to me that have stayed with me since then. He said, maintain, brother. That's all he said. Maintain. Maintain.
Just a random stranger.
Random stranger. Never saw him again. White gentleman that just opened up the door for me. I don't know if I had a look on my face of like, maybe I seemed down or something. I don't know. But that's, and I needed to hear those. He just said, maintain, brother. And anybody out there that is going through a struggle right now, or they're freshly new, is just maintain. Just stick the course. I promise you, it'll get better. Is it going to be great? Are you going to have bad days? Absolutely. You're going to have them. I still have bad days to this day. But you're going to get better at dealing with them, and you're going to get better at whatever it is that you can't do right now. You'll figure it out. And if you can't, guess what? People are amazing, and they always are there to help if you just ask. Don't be afraid to ask for help.
No, Danny, it's one of the most enjoyable conversations I've ever had. And I agree. I appreciate you. And I can't wait to meet you in person. I missed you out at the expo. I saw you from across the room, but I didn't get a chance to sit down with you.
I was there really
talk.
Quick. Yeah, they were shopping. And
yeah.
So Danny, you know, hopefully, you know, we think this show's going to grow, and we're trying to get a movement here and, you know, get the word out for as far as people with disabilities. So with that being said, let us know where these single ladies can find you on social media, buddy. What is your Facebook, Instagram?
I got Facebook, Daniel D. Flores. Instagram, it's QuadFather14. I think those are the only two I have. I used to have others, but I've just deleted them. But it's just those two.
Rico mentioned to me that you might join us in our next upcoming podcast as kind of the third. Is that something that you're thinking about?
I don't know. I mean, if you all want to talk about more specific things.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to hear your ideas for the show, or for questions you would ask, or the type of people you'd like to interview, or anything like that. It would certainly something that we would want to know from you.
Yeah, because I'll have a bunch of questions for you guys, because I see equipment all the time that pops up, new stuff. And I'm like, I wonder if that's really good or not, or if you all have had experience with those things.
Absolutely.
Equipment is one of those things that it's, you know, these are the things that help us accomplish our goals for the day, right?
Yeah.
And if it works, then we want to know about those things.
Yeah, I do want to delve into that with you at a different podcast. I would love to talk to you just about equipment that entire show.
Yeah, we could.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I've seen some amazing things. The technology is getting so, so awesome.
Right. All right. Well, that wraps up another episode of the Wheelchair Roundtable. So Danny, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Danny.
Everybody listening, thank you, and spread the word. All right. We'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.